Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the April 20th Board of Supervisors meeting. If you'd all please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Please say with me,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda, please.
We have added items to closed session, pending litigation, existing litigation with Sunny Acres et al. Versus County of San Luis Obispo, and Sierra Club versus County of San Luis Obispo et al. We have conference with labor negotiator. It is the intention of the board to meet in closed session to have a conference with its labor negotiator, Tammy Douglas Schatz, concerning deputy county council attorneys. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, ma'am. That brings us to our consent calendar. I have two requests on item A3. Mr. Greening, please, followed by Kim Daniels.
I'm Eric Greening, and in the spirit of Earth Week, this does look like a good step relative to the Climate Action Plan. It has to do with flexible work schedules such that people make the commute on fewer days and work longer days on those days. And, of course, many of the county jobs are centralized here, and there's a vast jobs housing imbalance between San Luis Obispo and the rest of the county, and so a lot of this has to do with long-distance commutes, which is what the inventory for our Climate Action Plan showed were a major source of emissions in this county. So I'm glad to see actions being taken, and they should be an example to other entities that are able to pull off flexible schedules. The one comment I would make in addition is one implication as more people move toward these flexible schedules and toward basically trying to move traffic off the peak travel periods is that it also means that with public transit, span of service is critical, and maintaining the span of service that we have is critical, and not cutting the span of service that we have is critical, because we are not just an 8 to 5 Monday through Friday county, and this only adds to the arguments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Daniels, please.
Good morning, Board. Kim Daniels, General Manager, San Luis Obispo County Employees Association. And I'm very pleased to see this on your agenda, and I think that having alternative work schedules and the ability to telecommute is a really positive thing. And my only concern is that the discretion on whether or not it's utilized is totally up to the department heads, and I just don't want to see this become a reward-punishment system or offered only to the chosen few that are more highly regarded by their supervisors. So I'm hoping there's going to be some type of oversight so that if an employee requests to work an alternative work schedule in their department and it's denied, that there's good just cause for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. That concludes the published request on the consent. My colleagues, Mr. Hill?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Asajian?
Not at this time, thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just a comment on item A3.
And Mr. Gibson?
None, sir.
Thank you, and I would like to comment on A3 and A12. Mr. Patterson, please.
Yes, thank you, Frank. On item A3, as was stated, it's simply an attempt for the county to help reduce its vehicle miles traveled, and I just want to point out to everyone that there's other options besides these flexible work hours and telecommuting and so forth. You can also get on the bus. You can carpool and vanpool. Also, we have Fun Ride here in San Luis Obispo. If you get to San Luis, there's a way of accessing a car with very little difficulty. And also, rideshare.org, if you go to that website, they can link you with a commuter guide and trip guide to help you reduce your car trip. So those are other options, and I'm happy to see the county taking this step, but I just wanted to point out that there are other options as well.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. I just wanted to comment quickly on this. This was one of the things that I wanted to do when I first got elected as a supervisor, is to try to find ways that we can assist our employees as well. I think the byproduct of the greenhouse gas reduction, that was something that I didn't, that wasn't my focal point for this, but it was, and it will, in my estimation, kind of walk the walk as we talk the talk. So I think that this is going to benefit our employees, because we've asked them to take cuts at various intervals. We're looking to try to reduce the debt that the county has, and they've participated in that. So I think we need to find ways that we can help them out and find benefits for them. And I think the flexible work hours and this remote work is one way to try to accomplish that. Item number 12, I just wanted to comment that we have Carol Tom, we're going to be recognizing with a resolution, I don't believe she is here, for her service with CASA. That's the court-appointed special advocates of San Luis Obispo, a wonderful organization. They do a lot of good work, and I wanted to congratulate her. With that, Madam Clerk, if you would introduce our first item for the board discussion, please.
I'll second Mr. Gibson's motion to approve the consent agenda.
Oh, we need to do that. Yeah, that's one of those things that has to be taken care of. Moved by Supervisor Sargent and seconded by Supervisor Gibson, or the other way around, whichever you choose to take. I need a roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Sargent?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Public comment.
And now we'll go to public comment. I don't know where I am this morning. I got up way, way too early. We're going to go to public comment before we jump into our items. First up, I have Eric Greening, followed by Robert Bronte.
Good morning again, and again, happy Earth Week again. I am Eric Greening, and of course, every day is Earth Day, and it's good to see the Earth being watered. It was very good to see a robust Earth Day fair in Atascadero. We haven't had one for quite a while, and I'd like to thank Supervisor Patterson for his support and robust participation of and at that event. Just following up from last week, of course, among the very important sentient beings on this earth are the whales. And since it appears that the conservation and open space element is going to be continued to next week, it frees up some of your time so that you have the opportunity, if you wish to get better educated on these issues, to hear from Mandy Davis, the whale warrior from the Sea Shepherd, who has all kinds of Antarctic adventures to tell and is also staying right on top of the issues in front of the International Whaling Commission and the moves that our government might or might not make relative to that commission that may or may not be disastrous for the whales or may actually be helpful depending on the pressure we put on them. So she's going to be at Cuesta College from 11 to 2 in room 5401 next to the cafeteria. And as you know, I asked last week that you agendize a hearing where we could add something to the legislative platform relative to those issues so that our lobbyists in Washington can be working on it. I don't think there's much that our Sacramento people can do. They've got their hands full. The people in Washington are obviously very critical. What would be good would be if you could agendize this prior to May 23rd, so that in addition to your action, including adding something to the legislative platform, it also could add a resolution that would be read at the event at Morro Rock that's going to be happening on May 23rd relative to the whales, our local gray whales in particular, whose numbers are, for at least anecdotally, way down. We're working with obsolete data, and there's a study that hasn't been released that may show what's actually happening. But anecdotally, it appears that their numbers are seriously down, and they should be of great concern to us. So if you're not formally acting on the conservation and open space element today, you can be educating yourselves about whales as part of our conservation picture. Thank you. Cuesta College, room 5401, 11 to 2. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might just briefly respond, I am in communication with some folks regarding the intended actions of the International Whaling Commission, and with a little more work, I intend to craft a resolution to bring forward for my colleagues' consideration, since whales are very much an important part of the life of this part of the world. So we'll look forward to that in a couple weeks, probably.
Mr. Bronte, please, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Good morning. My name is Robert Bronte. I live at 268 Indian Knob in San Luis Obispo. I'm here today to thank you for your support and service to the community. As supervisors, your decisions have a long-lasting impact on the quality of life and economic vitality of our county. Shortly, several of your seats will be up for election, and in order to help the community to learn more about the candidates' points of view, a candidates' forum has been scheduled for Wednesday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at the Ludwig Center. The event is sponsored by the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo County and is open and free to the public. The moderator of the event will be Bill Moram from the Tribune. We encourage all citizens to come to meet the candidates to learn more about their positions on local issues. Again, the Supervisors Forum will be held a week from Wednesday, April 28th at 7 p.m. at the Ludwig Center, located at 864 Santa Rosa at the corner of Santa Rosa and Mill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bronte. Gwen Taylor, and followed by Richard Markison, please.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. We have a wonderful rain event. Having said that, it does not mean that it is addressing the saltwater intrusion, which we all know is a very serious situation in Los Osos. In this day and age of internet government, is this truly a transparent local government? That's a question the two gentlemen must answer. With Twittering, texting, and emailing, is anyone truly listening? Again, you gentlemen must answer. Is this for listening to those in the public that not only take their time, but spend their own money for expert independent review of the Los Osos wastewater sewer system and the saltwater intrusion? The ISJ was filed 2/13/04, and when this complaint was filed, the resource management system had been certified at a severity 3 level. This is considered as a certified severity 3 level as the maximum safe yield of our water basin. The ISJ process was to develop a computer groundwater flow model of the basin as well as a peer review of the reports of the consultants. In the interim, those paying for this process have not had disclosure of any information regarding the ISJ. Under the premise that the lawyers have not agreed to release this information, this county has been labeled as the obstructionist to the release of this information. This begs the question, why? As the saltwater intrusion in the Los Osos wastewater basin continues to intrude into our drinking water, the community as a whole will be affected and will suffer not only the areas of the prohibition zone, but also outside, and they will be paying. The toll community will be paying for the problem of saltwater intrusion. Thank you.
Mr. Margetson, please.
Richard Margetson. This morning's topic is the endorsement by the Tribune of Mr. Gibson on Sunday. The official campaign started a month ago. The Tribune has already endorsed a candidate for our district without there being one forum, one debate, one interaction between these two candidates. There's something seriously wrong with the process here. I know they're probably trying to get the endorsement out there before the absentee ballots go out, and, you know, they can get a jump on getting those first few votes guaranteed for Mr. Gibson. But, and this isn't an endorsement for Mr. Ohilski. I don't know which candidate I'm going to support in this upcoming election, because I haven't heard their differing views on the subjects. There's been nothing in the paper. There's been nothing in an open public forum differentiating these two candidates. But the stance that the Tribune just takes to get a candidate elected without, you know, I don't even believe that the Tribune contacted anybody in our district to see what they thought of Mr. Ohilski at this point. Just to give a blanket endorsement for a candidate because of the stance they talk about in this article about, you know, he obviously can't satisfy everybody, but they think he's taken the appropriate stance. Here's the line from the thing. But we believe Gibson helped arrive at the compromise that satisfied most major concerns about the sewer project in Los Osos. Wasn't able to satisfy the Coastal Commission. One of the reasons it's before the Coastal Commission is because of Mr. Gibson changing the language in the conservation element from implement to develop. That's one of the reasons it's back. That alone would have stopped and gotten a de novo hearing. The thing that Marshall does bring to the table, because I've experienced it in Los Osos, I've experienced it as he being the chair of some of the subcommittees in Los Osos, he has a complete respect for public comment. His meetings are run with the maximum output because he doesn't like delay. If there's an issue that needs to be addressed, he wants it addressed then, and he wants the facts out, and he wants it corrected on time, not always protecting staff.
Thank you, Mr. Margeson. I would hope that we don't get into a political, I don't want to call it grandstanding, but I don't want to, I think this is the county's business, and I'd like to run it as such, and it isn't a forum for political either support or non-support, so I just want to make that comment. Mr. Patterson, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to remind everyone, following up on Mr. Greening's comments about the Earth Day Festival and Atascadero on Sunday, week, April 22nd, is the 40th anniversary of Earth Day, and to commemorate that, Atascadero, North County Earth Day Alliance, had a very successful event in Atascadero Lake Park this past Sunday. In San Luis Obispo this coming Saturday, April 24th, from 11 to 4, there will be a festival also, and I just encourage everyone to come down. There were over 40 exhibitors in Atascadero, and at least that many will be in San Luis Obispo this weekend. It's a great opportunity to see what people are doing out there to protect the planet and educate the community about activities that are available to them and opportunities to live a more ecological lifestyle. So, thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our public comment portion, and now we'll move into agendized items. Madam Clerk.
Our next item is C1, a hearing to consider expenditure proposals for the use of state citizens option for public safety program funds in the amount of $231,672. It's recommended approval.
Thank you. Mr. Reed.
Good morning, Frank Meacham, Chairman of the Board, and the rest of the board members. My name is Rob Reed. I'm a Chief Deputy with the Sheriff's Department. I'm here to speak on behalf of the State Citizens Option for Public Safety program, more commonly known as the COPS funding. The board letter and transmittal basically speak to the uses of this funding. It is required by law that this hearing be held prior to spending proposals being approved, and this is both for the Sheriff's Department and the District Attorney's Office. This year, the money came late in the fiscal year. We do have two fiscal years to spend this money. So we have, you know, the current fiscal year plus the next fiscal year. And because it was late, we will be working with the administrative office to reinstate one position that is currently slated for deletion in the 10-11 budget. That's all
it?
I have. If you have any questions, I'll...
Okay, I have no lights on. I have no requests from the public. I'll bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chair, I move we approve the staff's recommendation.
Second.
I have a motion by Supervisor Assangen, the second by Supervisor Patterson to approve staff's recommendation. Roll call, please.
Mr. Assangen?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. That was painless, huh?
Pretty easy.
Thank you very much.
You did good work, Chief. Okay. Next item, Madam Clerk.
Next item is C2, a hearing to consider resolutions of necessity for the acquisition of title interest to property required for the Willow Road Extension Project, Phase 2, 4th District. It's recommended approval and the structure person assigned.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Acosta.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, Board of Supervisors. Bill Acosta, right-of-way agent from the Department of Public Works. I have a very important hearing this morning regarding four properties required for the Willow Road Extension Project, Phase 2. We have Michael Cavalletto Ranches, LLC, Universal Life Church, and Kenyatta Neil Hobbs West, and Kenyatta Neil Hobbs East. And we'll find out more about those in a moment. The resolution of necessity process is a very important step in the eminent domain process. It's the first step of two, and it supports further processing of an action in eminent domain. Four main questions for this resolution of necessity: whether or not the public interest and necessity require the proposed project, whether or not the project is planned or located in the manner compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury. We do have a PowerPoint. Sorry. There we are. And we're on panel number two. Thank you. Okay, we do have four main questions that the board takes action upon. Whether or not the public interest and necessity require the proposed project, whether or not the project is planned or located in the manner compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury, whether or not the property is necessary for the project, and whether or not the offer required under Government Code 7267.2 has been made to the property owners. And for today's process, I mentioned earlier we had four resolutions of necessity to be considered. They're required at this time for right-of-way certification purposes. For this particular project, at this point in time, we're proposing a right-of-way certification number 3, which allows us to certify right-of-way on a limited number of resolutions of necessity, and that's what we're proposing here. And a separate resolution is presented for each of the subject properties. Also, resolution number 2010-62, adopted on March 9, 2010, is to be superseded by two of our proposed resolutions today, and I'll have more about that in a couple of moments. We are also going to review the need for the project and the resulting impacts to the subject parcels. We'll discuss project study considerations, receive comments from the staff, take testimony from the property owners if present, and consider all the evidence to support whether or not these properties meet the four requirements. We'll also confirm that the statutory offers have been made and adopt the resolution. Okay, a little bit of background. The Willow Road Extension Project has been on the area plan since the 1980s. The Board of Supervisors selected the project alignment under Environmental Impact Report adopted March of 1999, and the final project EIR was adopted by the Board in May of 2006. Our right-of-way consultant was hired to begin the acquisition for Phase 2 in July of 2009. Next panel is an overview of the Napomo Mesa Transportation Facility, and we do have the project area shown in green, and you can see Mr. Andrews using the arrow to point us to that area. Okay, for project need, the Overall, Napomo Mesa circulation requires additional freeway access as well as alternative access routes for emergency vehicles. Construction of this facility will reduce congestion at Teff Street also. The Willow Road Extension Project Phase 2 will continue the reduction in overall vehicle miles traveled on the Mesa and result in a reduction in greenhouse gases. A lot of benefits from this project. And next panel is just an overview of the project area. We will have a new interchange at Highway 101, and Phase 2 will extend from Hetrick to Thompson. Next panel, parcel acquisition status. The project requires 11 parcels, and as of this morning's consent agenda, 8 of 11 parcels have concluded negotiations, and all 8 have been approved by your board as of this morning. The project is expected to be advertised in June 2010 for construction to begin in the winter of 2011, and again, that's why our critical need to certify the right-of-way at this point with an advertising in June. The project is expected to proceed using state and local funds. The next panel is a map showing the four properties that are subject of our hearing this morning: Universal Life Church, Michael Cavalletto Ranches, and two from Kenyatta, Neil, and Michael. Next panel is an aerial view of the same four properties, and they all happen to be near one another. We may come back to that panel in a moment here. Okay, into the individual properties. The Michael Cavalletto Ranches property is a key property for the northbound 101 off-ramp that will lead down to the Willow Road. Excuse me. Parcel number 091-301-033. This is a 9.22-acre property overall. We are requiring 0.1942-acre in fee acquisition, with certain access rights being required along with that for freeway purposes. Also have a 0.0275-acre temporary construction easement and a 0.2494-acre temporary subterranean construction easement to allow for soil nailing to occur for a temporary wall. This is zoned agriculture with no structural improvements in the acquisition area. And the statutory offer was made to the property owner for the appraised value on March 24, 2010, and negotiations are ongoing. Based on that date, you can see that this offer was relatively recent, and so we have a lot to discuss with this property owner. As far as we know, the property owner has not formally requested an appearance to contest the adoption of this resolution of necessity today. Next property, Universal Life Church. We have some good news on this one. The negotiations have concluded for this property, and the transaction was approved by your board with today's consent agenda. We did need to leave it into this hearing because of a late arrival of some signed documents. But with today's consent, this has been approved, and we've concluded negotiations, and this resolution of necessity, proposed resolution of necessity, can be removed from the process today. Next panel is, we have two resolutions required from the same property owner. Properties are on separate sides of Highway 101. Kenyatta Neil Hobbs on the west side of the highway is parcel 091-301-041, total of 277.4 acres, zoned RR, rural residential, with no improvements, 1.04 acres of fee simple absolute is required, and that's as encumbered plus certain access rights. We have 0.63 acre of utility easement number one and 0.04 acre utility easement number two. And then on the east side, property number 091-301-062, total of 160.78 acres, zoned agriculture with no improvements in the right-of-way area. It's 0.39 acre of fee simple is what we require for the project, including certain access rights. And that area includes 0.20 acres for freeway purposes and a 1/900 of an acre remnant parcel. The statutory offers for each of the two properties were made to the owners on January 25th, 2010, and negotiations are ongoing. The owners have not formally requested an appearance to contest the adoption of the two resolutions of necessity sought for these properties this morning. Also, if I hadn't mentioned on the two Kenyatta properties, these two resolutions will supersede the resolution from March 9th that I mentioned earlier. So down to our recommendations. It is our recommendation that your Honorable Board affirm that the public interest and necessity require the project, and affirm that the project is planned or located in the manner compatible with the greatest public good and least private injury, and affirm that the noted properties are necessary for the project, and affirm that the offers required under Government Code 7267.2 have been made to the owners. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. I have one request here, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to know if the acquisition, I believe one, if not two, of those properties are where the C&M Nursery Avocado Citrus Ranch is.
That's Kevin.
Will that freeway activity, not the activity itself, but the construction of the freeway facilities there impact their avocado and citrus nursery at all?
We do require, if we go back to the panel for the Cavaletto property, please, Mr. Andrews. We do require a small area of acquisition, and as part of that acquisition and construction, there will be a retaining wall constructed for the southbound off-ramp that will be in a downhill status. And as part of constructing that retaining wall, there will be some sheet piles driven in and some backfilling and that sort of thing. But as far as our planning of the project goes, that nursery is expected to continue operation.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one request from the audience. Mr. Greening, please.
I'm Eric Greening, and I'm not one of the property owners, but I guess I'm the only one speaking. So you have several findings relative to the public interest and necessity. So if one of them is questionable, you may be able to move forward anyway. But I do have a question about one of them. This continued the reduction in vehicle miles traveled, that this project would continue the reduction. The first question is, continue implies that vehicle miles traveled on the Mesa are reducing now, and I certainly was not aware of that. So is that happening, or is the wording continue unfortunate? The other bit of skepticism I have about that is part of the payment for this is going to be revenues from future development on the Mesa, and that future development would seem, as part of the project financing, to actually be likely to add to vehicle miles traveled, even though people who are there now would have more direct routes to where they're going with this interchange. If you're also adding people to help pay for this, I have not seen any calculations that show either current vehicle miles traveled reduction or vehicle miles traveled reduction including future development that will occur from a baseline of now. So I'd be interested to know if that particular supporting evidence can actually be found. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I have no other requests to speak. Mr. Acosta, do you want to respond, please?
We have Dale Ramey, our project manager, if I could ask him to provide a response.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Dale Ramey. I'm with the Public Works Department, and Willow Road is my project. Continuing vehicle mile reduction is probably a little bit of a misnomer, but it will reduce future miles traveled because people will no longer be required to go down to Test Street or up to Los Barros to access the freeway. So traffic will increase, but the mileage that they will travel will be reduced because of the shorter path to the freeway. As part of our NEPA document, which is a federal environmental document, we did have to perform a greenhouse gas reduction calculation, and I do have that information, and I will be happy to get it to you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I have no other requests to speak. We'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add to what Mr. Ramey spoke of, vehicle miles travel, but when we take congestion out of Taft Street, when the cars are not sitting there idling for a few minutes, I believe that also reduces emission going through the air. So that's something to take into consideration. I'm appreciative of Mr. Costa's work, and I'm assured that as we move forward with the remainders of the properties, that the same fairness will take a role in our discussions and negotiations. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll move we approve the staff's recommendation.
Second. It's been moved by Supervisor Sajjan, seconded by Supervisor Hill to adopt the resolutions of necessity and staff's recommendation. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Just hope to break ground before I leave office.
We're trying. Thank you very much. Madam Clerk?
You see. Next item is D1, a presentation to update the Board of Supervisors on the state budget by California State Association of Counties Legislative Analyst Jeff Neal.
Thank you. Mr. Neal, stage is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thanks for having me here today. So thank you for having me here today and allowing me to present to you. I just wanted to give you a quick update on the good news about the state budget and its effect on counties. As you likely know, the governor called the legislature into a special session to deal with current year and budget year spending being well above the revenues that they were projecting. And so the legislature debated for a while and sent him several $1 billion worth of cuts to solve what was then projected to be a $20 billion deficit over this current fiscal year and the coming fiscal year, about $20 billion, 19.9, although some people think that it's far higher than that. The legislature did send the governor about $4 billion worth of cuts. He promptly vetoed about half of that, stating that he had that some of those cuts were cuts to the budget for this coming fiscal year, and since they hadn't passed the budget yet, they couldn't go ahead and cut it, even though he had asked for some of those cuts in his proposal to them. Included in that package, and of particular interest to counties, is the transportation revenue swap, which has to do. And the governor did approve this change. What that would do, or what that will do, is eliminate the sales tax on gasoline and replace it with an increased excise tax or fee on gasoline in an equivalent amount. The short-term impact on counties is nil, because the amount of money from the one is the same as the amount of money from the other. The counties get to maintain county road systems. However, the fee revenue is not as well protected from meddling by the state as the sales tax revenue was. The sales tax revenue, usually called Prop 42, is pretty well nailed down. The fee revenue, which we usually call HUDA, is somewhat protected from state misappropriation, but not as strongly, and so they can still, in the future, mess with that a little bit. The other thing that the budget actions included were legislative approval of further deferrals. Of course, over the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of money that the state owed counties in particular, as well as schools and some other local agencies, delayed from early in the fiscal year until later in the fiscal year, and they approved more of those. So plan, you're doing your budget, plan to get some of your money a little bit later than you're used to getting it. The new legislative session is off and running. We've had a lot of committee hearings the last couple of weeks. CSAC follows hundreds of bills in every subject area that affect counties. The deadline for legislators to get their bills that have a fiscal impact, which is most of them, out of their house of origin, is rapidly approaching. So we have folks over in the Capitol every day at many committee hearings. You can keep up with all of our legislative goings-on by checking out our legislative bulletin, which I assume several of you already get, and that details essentially every bill that counties might be interested in and the action on them for the week. It's a good way to keep up with it. Also, on our website, if there's a particular bill that you're interested in, there's a spot on our website where you can enter the bill number and everything comes up, where it is in the process, any letters that CSAC has sent to the legislature about it. And then, of course, we have our policy committees, where we have six different policy committees where the association's legislative policies are set, and Supervisor Gibson is the chair this year of the policy committee that I work with, which is the Government Finance and Operations Committee, where we do taxes and public employment and elections and all of the best issues, I think. That policy committee, along with all the others, is going to be meeting at our legislative conference on June 2nd and 3rd. I'd encourage as many of you to attend as feel interested in the subjects. We have all of our I said earlier we have six policy committees. We have five. There are two that are kind of in Government Finance and Operations together, so I think of it as six. All the policy committees are going to meet. All supervisors are welcome to attend and vote at all policy committees. One vote per county, but any supervisor there can attend. No need to be on an official list. We also have speakers, including the state treasurer, Bill Lockyer. I believe I heard that the budget committee chair, Senator Duchaney, is going to be speaking as well. And of course, it's a good time to meet with your legislators, since you're going to be in Sacramento anyway. We have a few new ways to communicate with you. We have CSAC has a blog now that is a good way to get information about what's going on at the state level that's either more detailed or more focused on the county perspective on what's going on in Sacramento. It's very easy to sign up to be notified of new posts either through email or if you use an RSS reader. It's easy enough to use that. And we will, in the next few weeks, we'll have a new publication that combines two of our old publications to make it a little bit easier for you to follow what's going on, our legislative bulletin and what we call Around Our Counties, which is kind of news about supervisors and other folks around the state, will be combined into one yet-to-be-named bulletin that will probably be called something like the CSAC bulletin, but that's not finalized yet. Nothing fancy in any case. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the Finance Corporation. I know that the county uses their services. A couple of things that are worth noting, though, is that there's one program that's available through the Finance Corporation, through U.S. communities and California communities, that your county likely already uses to purchase products at significant discounts, everything from paper clips to cars for your fleet or possibly even buses for your for any transit that you do. That program now is available to county employees for their personal use. So it's something that just started earlier this year, and I think folks might appreciate being able to use. There's also in the packets that you provided there, there's some good information in there, CSAC legislative priorities at the state and federal level. There's also information, though, about the services that you use from the Finance Corporation and others that you might find useful to use in the future. CSAC has a new institute about for supervisors and for executive staff about how to do your jobs more effectively, or how to become more informed about the most critical issues, whether that's water or whether that is compliance with AB 32, SB 375, or whether it's about leadership generally. It's called the CSAC Institute. I believe there's also a sheet showing the upcoming classes for the CSAC Institute in that packet that I provided. And I highly encourage your attendance. I've been to four of the classes, and they've ranged from pretty good to outstanding. There have been a couple that were particularly useful for me, and they're very cheap. I think they range from $25 to $75, so it's something that I think is worth your time to examine. NACO, of course, San Luis Obispo County, is a member of the National Association of Counties as well. Just want to point out that this year and last year have been years of note for California in NACO because Valerie Brown, a supervisor from Sonoma County, is the president of NACO. It's the first time in a very long time that that's been the case, and she has been able to appoint California supervisors to a number of committee posts in NACO, and so California has a stronger voice in NACO now than we think ever before. And the annual meeting this year in July is not very far away in Washoe County, Nevada, so I would certainly encourage your participation in that event. April is County Government Month. I believe you're already aware of that because you passed a resolution noting it. Want to thank you for doing that. This is a nationwide campaign that most of the counties through California are doing. And this coming Thursday in the state assembly, the assembly member Connie Conway, who was CSAC president a couple of years ago from Tulare County, she's now an assembly member, and she is going to be presenting CSAC president Tony Oliveira, Supervisor Brown, president of NACO, with a resolution noting that that's County Government Day and this is County Government Month, and helping to illuminate all of the many things that counties do for Californians, including running most state programs or providing most state programs to citizens. And if you have any questions about the budget or legislation or anything that CSAC does, I'm happy to answer those now.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I have no request to speak. Now I do.
Yeah.
Mr. Gibson.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you here today, Jeff. We appreciate the effort you made to get from Sacramento. Just for colleagues and the public's benefit, you know, the California State Association of Counties, usually known as CSAC, is an advocate for statewide for the kind of work that we do here in local government. And Jeff is one of, I think I just counted on the sheet, 15 analysts that cover the entire range of issues of importance to counties in the legislature and in the agencies that that implement legislation in the state. And I can't speak highly enough about the work that Jeff and his colleagues do under the capable management of Paul McIntosh, the executive director of CSAC. You know, it's a complicated state, 38 million folks here, and we have a mere 260-some thousand in this county. To try to keep track of all the possible elements that that might affect our work here is truly daunting. One of the things we might also mention, Jeff, is that aside from our policy committees, we also have the State Reform Task Force, which is an ad hoc group of about, I think there are about 10 supervisors and associated staff who've gotten together a couple times to look into various issues of reform that are moving forward, both within the legislature slowly and also on the streets as people gather signatures for ballot reform measures. And I don't know if you have further comments on where we're going with that, but I see that as a very important educational process, both for individual counties and for the population as a whole.
I think so, and I think it's been really useful for supervisors that have been involved, including yourself, to be able to have a time for hours at a time to focus on those issues and really go through them and their effect on counties. And these go from earlier the task force talked about the constitutional convention and the possibilities of that. Of course, that's kind of gone by the wayside now. Also, the California Forward initiatives, which are the signature gathering stalled but are now pending in the legislature, and then also the initiative, and maybe most importantly at this point, the initiative that is being sponsored by the League of Cities and some of their partners that would certainly have some benefits for counties, but would have probably have some detrimental effects as well. And the task force asked staff to prepare some comments about an analysis of that measure, and that's one of the things that will be presented at most of the policy committee meetings at the legislative conference, because it is because it would have some wide-ranging impacts. I also want to thank Supervisor Gibson for being involved in CSAC, both in the reform task force as chair of one of our policy committees, and let the rest of you know that we are truly glad that he is becoming more involved in CSAC, and we look forward to more of it.
Appreciate my colleague's support. I urge you to attend the legislative conference if you can, particularly this year. The CSAC has, I think, a lot of potential as an advocacy group on behalf of our constituents, largely through our nonpartisan nature. And we try to stress that every chance we get. We'll be having some very important discussions on June 2nd and 3rd, and look forward to next steps. And again, thanks so much for your time here, Jeff.
Thank you. Yes, Jeff, you talked a little bit about the state budget and the $20 billion gap, which we're aware of. We're now just finalizing our budget here in the county. You mentioned that the legislature reduced that gap by about $4 million, but the governor vetoed two of it. So by my math, it's still an $18 billion gap. Do you have any insights on where the governor's heading on his May revision?
Well, a couple of things. One is that one small bit of good news is that the state's revenues have been coming in a little bit better than expected. So that's another $1 or $2 billion.
Billion here, a billion there. Right? You know.
But $1 or $2 billion, can provide a lot of health care for children. Or be that much less pressure to raise taxes again, although I think that's probably not something that we have to worry about too much in this climate. Some of the things that the governor proposed in his January budget were not acted on by the legislature, and I think there will be pressure on them. He's going to come out with his revised budget based on the new revenues, the new revenue projections in the middle of May. And I think that will include a lot of things that were in the January budget proposal that the legislature didn't act on. That will include things like eliminating the CalWORKs program, the Welfare to Work program. It will include things like possibly eliminating Healthy Families, which is the health care for children that don't have other health care, obviously. And I think a lot of those things are going to come back. You'll see several of them are outlined, again, in that packet that I gave you. There are four or five or six white papers about various proposals. The greater portion of the governor's January budget proposal solved the state's budget problems by either shifting costs directly or program responsibilities on to counties, whether that's for health programs or human service programs, whether it's on public safety. There were proposals to shift people who would go to state prisons instead to local jails, regardless of the fact that the majority of county jails around the state are at or beyond their capacity, just like the state is. And so I think we'll see more of that. I think we'll see all of those proposals come back, and if they can come up with any other way to shift state responsibilities to the counties, they'll do so. Of course, another one, and one that's big here in San Luis Obispo County, is the Williamson Act, which I meant to bring up earlier, the Land Conservation Act. there's a strong advocacy effort on behalf of on the part of CSAC as well as the Regional Council of Rural Counties and many counties around the state to try and get full funding back for the state subventions to counties for the land conservation program. And it's, you know, on the one hand, it's only $35 or $40 million. On the other hand, they need every bit that they can get. And so I think that we're going to be pushing hard on that this year, and it's going to be a pretty difficult fight, especially given the billions of other dollars that they are either responsibility that they're shifting to counties or money that they're shifting away from counties.
Thank you. I'm sorry I asked you that question.
So if you can, when you're developing your budget, try and give yourselves a couple billion dollars of leeway.
Thank you, I think. In regard to the Williamson Act, I think even though the suggestion is that there's a minimal amount from a 42.5 million dollars in the subventions, I think that there should be a cost-benefit analysis done. I would submit that the benefit to that far exceeds that $42 million relative to the Williamson Act. And I just, and as the number one industry in the state of California is agriculture, it just absolutely amazes me that that is being kind of pushed aside.
Well, there's one possibility is that the state, probably led by the Legislative Analyst Office, will make an effort to try and recast the provisions of the Williamson Act. There's a lot of talk in Sacramento that they're, when there's talk about the Williamson Act, that they're, because remember that a quarter to a third of the legislature has a toe in Los Angeles County, which isn't one of the big Williamson Act receivers, or recipient counties. But when there is talk about the Williamson Act, one thing that comes up is the amount of, I don't think people use the word fraud, but the amount of land that isn't in any danger of being developed that is nonetheless receiving funds to keep it from being developed. And so I think one thing we'll see, and I don't know if it'll be this year or if it'll be over the next 2 or 3 years, is an effort by the state, like I said, probably led by the LAO, to come up with a different way of determining which land should be given the property tax preferential treatment, and you know, maybe setting up a more fully tiered system based on proximity to urban centers or something like that. So that'll definitely be something to watch over the next couple of years.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way we should look at Williamson Act is not if we have enough land that could be developed, but enough agricultural land that it's a help to the farmer to keep it in farming activities.
Oh, sure.
And that's the mentality that we need to sell to our legislative to look at it from a positive way rather than find a negative and walk out of it for a reason that doesn't exist.
I think that's a good point, and one that I think we'll be making to the state, and one that I hope as the issue continues that you all will as well, both as a board and individually.
I think the push should be that this is yet another avenue to help our farmers to stay in the industry, which is, as the chair said, it is our number one industry, and forget the other part.
Okay, thank you, sir. I have one request from the public, Mr. Greening, and maybe there's a question that you might be able to respond to. Dependent upon Mr. Greening, I'm sure there's several.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I tend to have questions. Certainly when we're talking about the Williamson Act, I would assume they know that they can't mess with existing contracts. Those are contracts. And frankly, we've seen proposals for pretty odd things show up in places where you would not expect them. So I don't know that there's any land that could never possibly be developed if it weren't for this program. But for heaven's sakes, let's remember that people who have signed long-term contracts, the state just has no business suddenly reinventing the terms of those contracts. So it would only, whatever they would do might affect new contracts. But obviously we get pretty touchy about the Williamson Act around here.
And
the other issue I wanted to raise relative to the transportation flip,
There used to be four distinct sources of operating funding for public transit through the state, and one of them has been restored in a way that I'm not sure how literal it is, and that was the sales tax on diesel. There's some connection between the STA and the sales tax on diesel, or the diesel tax. I guess it's like the gas tax on diesel. And what I don't understand, and what even some of our transit providers don't understand, is to what extent this tracks the price of diesel. In other words, is it a per gallon thing, or is it a per gallon thing, but then somehow they do some calculations if the price of diesel goes up so that the STA increases commensurately or partially? And just in terms of a lobbying position we should be taking, when the price of fuel in general goes up, whether it's diesel for the transit operators or gasoline for people driving, the cost to transit agencies go up, and the resources available to transit agencies should go up in track with that. And there are two main reasons. One is the cost of fuel itself is an important operational line item for transit agencies. And the other is that when the cost of gasoline goes up, the so-called choice riders, the people who could drive but choose transit, that population flocks to transit. And I know when we had gasoline at $4 something per gallon, we had buses carrying as many as 90 people toward Cuesta College on the Route 12. And so the need for transit agencies to be able to add extra service and so on increases when the price of fuel increases. So does it track, or is it assumed that it will be calculated to track, or is it completely irrelevant? And then you know my position. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. And for us to have an assumption of the level of knowledge in our legislature, I'm not quite sure that we can go there.
Have a lot of good people working for them. It's a pretty thorny subject that you kind of hit one of the nails on the head, and that was a big issue when the legislature first passed the transportation tax swap. That was one of the big issues, and they ended up not messing with, partly for political reasons and partly for policy reasons, messing with the diesel stuff differently than they messed with everything else. And so I think that at least part of what Mr. Green is concerned about has remained as I think he would want it. I'd encourage, if you want details about it, though, more detail than I can give right now, we do have some documents on our website at www.csac.counties.org. If you look under CSAC advocacy and budget issues, there are a couple of pretty detailed documents talking about the transportation swap and how it exactly will go into effect.
Thank you, Mr. Neal.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments today. This is a receive and file. I need a motion to so choose.
Or move. Second.
And moved by Supervisor Sargent, seconded by Supervisor Gibson as a receive and file. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Madam Clerk.
Next item is E1, consideration of a request by Jack's Helping Hand for an authorization to process a land use element amendment application to change the land use category from agricultural to public facilities on a 30-acre parcel for the purpose of facilitating a proposal for a new community park focusing on universal accessibility located on the Napomo Mesa in Napomo 4th District.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. Mr. Hogue.
Just a short introductory remark, and then I'll turn it over to Brian Pedrotti, the project manager. This is a request to authorize a general plan amendment for processing. If your board agrees, then we will do all the analysis and environmental determination necessary for it. We'll come back for a public hearing, first before the Planning Commission and then before the Board of Supervisors. And Brian will give you the details on that. And I wanted to point out that the following item is related to this, after you consider the authorization, you'll be considering a fee waiver request for both the general plan amendment and the conditional use permit that would be necessary to build a park on the site once it's rezoned. So Brian will explain all that, and I'll turn it over to him. Thank you.
Mr. Petrotti. Good morning. Brian Petrotti, staff planner. This project is a request by Jack's Helping Hand for an authorization of a general plan amendment. Jack's Helping Hand Incorporated is a nonprofit organization requesting authorization to process a land use element amendment to change the land use category from agriculture to public facilities on a site in Napomo for the purposes of a new community park focusing on universal accessibility. The proposed park includes a variety of amenities, including a universally accessible playground, restroom buildings, shelter, gazebo, parking areas, a therapeutic horse riding center, and sports field areas and bicycle and pedestrian trails and gardens. Now, the project is located at the south end of Illinois Way, at the south end of the Napomo Mesa, on the bluff edge, southwest of the community of Napomo. The project is in the agricultural land use category. There is agricultural to the south and east, and residential rural to the north and west. The site is located at the edge of the bluff, and essentially you can see that the residential rural to the north is large lot rural residential development. You have the flat area on the top of the mesa until you hit the trail. There's a bluff trail right at the edge, and then the topography drops dramatically down into the Oso Flacco Valley, and then you have cropland down at the south end. The major issues regarding a general plan amendment authorization are whether or not the request is consistent with the land use element purpose and character statements, whether or not it is consistent with the policies of the agricultural and open space element, and whether it is a logical location of the public facilities land use category. The purpose statements in the land use element are the following. I'll run through them fairly quick. They're also in the staff report. It's to identify lands and structures committed to public facilities and public agency uses that benefit the public, provide areas of development of public facilities to meet public needs, identify adequately sized facility locations that satisfy both community and regional needs relating to the populations being served, and then to identify facility sites based on the character of the area and compatibility with and supportive of comprehensive plans of the agencies. And the character statements are areas with existing public or quasi-public facilities or publicly owned lands, areas that satisfy the specialized site location requirements of public agencies, where facilities will be visible and accessible to their users, and areas without known natural or man-made hazards. The project appears to be consistent with the purpose and character statements. The park is shown in the Parks and Recreation element as a future park. Over the course of the last few years, there have been several actions by the Planning Commission and the Subdivision Review Board and the Board of Supervisors regarding the future park, including a general plan conformity report for the donation of the property in 2005, a public lot determination for the acquisition of the property in 2005, a general plan conformity report for the long-term lease agreement for the future park in 2008. And in addition, the proposed use is allowed in the public facilities land use category with a discretionary permit. In addition, staff looks at the general goals of the land use element in the review of an authorization of the general plan amendment. In general, the general goals identify the balancing of the capacity of growth with sustained resources, a distinction between urban and rural areas, encouragement of infill parcels first, and lastly, and maybe most importantly, if public facilities are necessary in rural areas, allow for sufficient buffers to protect environmental and agricultural land. And again, staff found that the project appears consistent with these general goals. The amendment helps implement a continuing process of a planned park on the site. The park is divided topographically with the lower portion on the Mesa edge and within the Oso Flaco Valley, and then the upper portion where the park is proposed, consisting of the top of the Mesa. Staff also looked at the policies of the agricultural and open space element, including AGP 11 regarding agricultural water supplies, AGP 17 for agricultural buffers, and AGP 24, the conversion of agricultural land. You also have a letter from the Agricultural Commissioner's Office discussing all of these items. And in general, the Agricultural Commissioner's Office will be looking at these items if the project is authorized for processing. In general, the Agricultural Commissioner's Office did not or did support the authorization and does not oppose the authorization of the general plan amendment. And so your authorization options are to authorize the processing for the change as requested or to not authorize the processing. These are a couple photos of the site. This is one looking north from about the middle of the site. And this shows the drop-off of the Napoma Mesa edge. We're just about right at the bluff edge with this viewed out toward the west, toward the ocean. And we have a site plan available, which is also in your packet if you want to look at some of the details. And that concludes staff's presentation, and we're available for questions.
Thank you. Have any questions at this point, Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. I want to thank staff for the good job they have done bringing this forward, and just to assure those who have concerns that this process is just to authorize to put this project through the process and be able to bring all of the concerns with either answers to the questions that might rise and or mitigation measures for some of the areas that could be impacted. I know that water is an issue, but again, the whole purpose of allowing the process is to find questions and address all these issues and come back at a certain date.
Okay, I have no more lights on at this point in time.
Maybe I could just ask if I might.
If you push the button, then you get
caught. Okay. You know, it's over. It's way over here. The water purveyor is the NCSD at this point?
Well, at this point, the proposal is for an on-site well.
Okay.
And so at this point, that's what the proposal is.
Okay, and so let me ask differently. It's within the NCSD service area?
No, it's not.
It's not, okay. Thank you. I heard Supervisor Sajjan mention, and I think it's right, we had a couple issues as we move forward. This proposed amendment could include planning standards that would address any issues that pop up. Is that true?
Correct.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
I'm going to go to the public at this point. Mr. Wynn?
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, Supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm from the Napoma Community Services District. This is a wonderful project. This is a project that is one of the best ideas that's come across in decades, and the generosity of the Tompkins family that's made it possible, and your work to accept it into your park plans and to move ahead has been very positive. We do not want to stand in the way of this, and yet, unfortunately, we find ourselves concerned about one issue, which we're hoping that we can work with you to resolve. As we currently see the project, and we're open to education, this is in violation of your own ordinance, 3090, which was passed in June of 2006, and simply says that there shall be no general plan amendments on the Mesa within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area unless they have supplemental water brought onto the site and it's designated for that project. The supplemental water project that we're currently working on will not have water for anything outside of the district boundaries, and the second phase of that is years away. And if we waited for that, I'm afraid that it would do damage to this project. That's not our purpose. Let me review 3090 briefly, if I can. It says a number of things, but the limitation on general plan amendments is something that we feel very strongly about, because should that prohibition go away, there's all sorts of projects that could be approved simply wouldn't have water. So our challenge was to work with you to see if there was some way we could condition this. I appreciate Supervisor Gibson's notion that there should be planning standards and other things that would help make this a case all of its own and not set a precedent for other use. Here's what we think you might consider doing. If the well to supply this park comes off of your land, your parcel, but it's down the hill, so it's no longer on the top of the mesa, we think it might be outside of the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area. Now, this is a map that you created with 3090, and we think, we don't know for sure, but we think that runs around the top of the mesa. So if you went down the hill and got your well, you would not be violating it. It's gray. It's not a clear win, but we're looking for gray if we can find it. Secondly, if you could put restrictions on this property to say that no new wells would be drilled on the property itself, on top of the mesa, in the future. And third, if you made findings that this is a public property for public use, that it's not residential, and therefore it's not in violation of 3090, we would find that sufficiently ambiguous that we would gladly step out of the way. But
thank
those
you.
Are our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. I don't have anything on the card from you, so I didn't know.
Good morning, Chairman. Jeremy Fine from Wallace Group. I'm here on behalf of the applicants of Paul and Bridget Reddy, Jack Helping's hand. They're actually in the audience today. In front of you is actually the presentation I've prepared for this item, plus hopefully the next item on there. I want to thank staff and planning staff for their presentation. They actually did a very thorough presentation. And Brian, could you put that up? Sorry, what? I do have a presentation, yes. Yes, that's correct. Well, while that's loading up, I'll just go ahead and get started. In front of you is the general plan authorization request to rezone the property from ag to public facilities. As planning staff has indicated, we also have applied for a conditional use permit for the development of the park in the future. With that, staff did also address the general history of the project. Back in 2005, if you go to the third slide, next one, this project has been in the works for nearly 5 years. Jack's Helping Hand has been basically a foundation generated from Jack and Paul and Bridget's son when he passed away. And their goal of looking at the community and providing needs for special kids, special needs. Thank you. So back in 2005, Newt Tompkins actually dedicated the property for specifically 30 acres for a park. In 2006, the county Parks and Recs element identified it as a future park site. Between then, 2008-ish is when Ordinance 3090 came into play. 2009, the county actually signed a lease directly with Jack's Helping Hand.
to move it back to previous, to authorize a 99-year lease with Jack's Helping Hand for the park, specifically for physically and mentally disabled children and young adults. Since then, between 2007 and 2010, there's been a lot of public interaction. That's actually further down the slides. And then culminating to the actual submittal of the general plan amendment and the conditional use permit in February. And we've had gone to South County Advisory Council twice, to the Landings Committee hearing, as well as their council, Advisory Council, and they've all supported the project. This is actually a more detailed outline of all the public interactions we've had with the local community and the board, and the, as staff has mentioned, Subdivision Review Board, Planning Commission, and the Board of Supervisors over the last 5 years. General plan compliance, the property is at the edge of the Napoleon Mesa, of which 40% of the property is too steep, as identified in the ag response, and is erosive for suitable, and too erosive for suitable crops. The majority of the Mason is designated residential rural, and the existing land use standards preclude development on or near the Mesa. But this, again, this is for public facilities, as such as for a park. Talk about need. There is a need for this type of a park. The San Luis Obispo County Office of Education reported that there are over 4,000 special needs children that are enrolled in the public schools countywide, which is nearly 12% countywide. The state average, a national average, is 10%, and even locally for the actual Lucio Mar School District alone, they have actually over 12% of special needs children, and that's where this park actually be located within their district. The vision and the park project overview, the playground for Jackberry Park was designed from Shane's inspiration, whose sole mission is to create universally accessible playgrounds and programs that integrate children of all abilities, socially, physically, emotionally, fostering acceptance and friendships and understanding. So it's a heartwarming project that we hope to continue on and through the general plan amendment process. And there's a lot more detail in this PowerPoint presentation about project location, which staff has already shown you once. Project amenities include the Inspiration Park. There's a lot of details involved in that to make things readily accessible for special needs children. And that's not just the accessibility issue is the big one for them, and being interactive. And that's actually the very first drawing of the Jackson Inspiration Park area. The project is designed to be in a phased component over the years, and depending on available funding, because the organization, Jackson Helping Hand, is funding this project and maintaining it themselves. In addition to community involvement, there's been a lot of services volunteered. This is just a short list of all the people in the community that have actually been involved with this project for the last 5 years. And there's additional design components with the project itself. I am available to answer questions. You can go ahead and stop the slide.
Thank you. I have no questions at this point. I have no one else asking to speak, so I'm going to bring it back to the board for discussion action. Mr. Saji.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Jeremy and Wallace and Associates for all their volunteerism. All this paperwork that you see in the presentation is a good gift to the cause. I want to thank you for that. I'm aware of the 3090 as Mr. Wainbrod brings it forward. There are areas where we have some discretion because this is a public facility to be used by the public. I believe that will come into the picture, but the beauty of the going through process is to address some of those concerns. And we're aware of the existing wells way below. We'll do what's right. The whole idea is to bring a project to the community that otherwise does not exist. And if you have children that are in need of this type of facilities, you have to take them
either to San Francisco or to Los Angeles. So there is a real need for this project, and the purpose it will serve will be one of a kind. So I'm hoping that as we go through the process and that the legal issues will be addressed and the concerns will be addressed and will be brought back to us, as it's been brought to us so far with the blessings of the community, that we'll find enough reasons out there to qualify us to go through. Because when I look at the agriculture land and the allowable use that doesn't even require a general plan, when you can mine and you can have a pump crude oil out of it or have other activities, weddings, and I'm thinking, wow, why can't we just make it happen when it is something that serves the entire community and our children?
With that, I have some questions, and then I'll go back to you.
Okay, thank you.
At that point. Mr. Hill? Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly I agree with Mr. Asajian. This is something that would be a great addition for our community, and I think focusing on universal accessibility is a really terrific component of it. But I did want to have perhaps Mr. McNulty weigh in on some of the issues that Mr. Wynn brought up so that we move forward in the appropriate manner. Mr. McNulty.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office, and Supervisor Hill, I think the answer to that is today you're not taking any action which would implicate Ordinance 3090, and probably if you do authorize the amendment, we'll have time to try to make a determination as to whether or not there's some accommodation that can be made or whether an amendment to that ordinance would be required in order to allow the project to go forward. As you know, the board adopted that ordinance as an amendment to Title 22. It can actually amended through that same process, and if that were what ultimately needed to happen in order to make this go forward, we could come back with a request for further initiation or something like that.
So that can happen through the process?
Would actually require one more step, but I don't think it's any greater in difficulty than where we've already been. So.
Okay. I'll go back to the supervisor of the district.
Thank you. With that, will we approve the staff's recommendation and allow the process, to authorize the process?
I'll second.
I have a motion by Supervisor Sargent and a second by Supervisor Hill to process the amendments. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sargent?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am. Next item, please.
Next item is C3, a hearing to consider a request by Jack's Helping Hand to waive permit processing fees for a general plan amendment to change the land use category from agricultural and waive permit processing fees for a conditional use permit for a new community park focusing on the universal accessibility located on the Napomo Mesa in Napomo, 4th District. It's recommended approval.
Thank you. Mr. Hogue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this is related to the immediately preceding item. We did this second because if you didn't authorize the GPA, we didn't need to do this part. But now, obviously, we do, and the applicant has submitted that information indicating the community benefit of the project. We've reviewed it in accordance with the fee schedule, and we've determined that while the department has the ability to waive $5,000, it cannot apply to the general plan amendment, only to the CUP, so then that leaves about $13,000 more to go. And that is within your board's ability if you find that the fee waiver is equitable and in the public interest. So I may have just given the staff report, but Brian may have something to add.
Mr. Bedrage, he's stolen your thunder. If there's any more that you'd like to cast out here.
Sure, Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. Basically, it is as Warren said, it's the same location of the project. It is a request to waive the permit processing fees totaling $13,843 for both the general plan amendment fee as well as the conditional use permit fee for the community park. The Director of Planning and Building has waived the land use permit fees totaling $5,000 for the project, and
All permit processing fees in excess of $5,000 can only be waived by the Board of Supervisors. And this is from footnote 7E of our fee schedule, which states that notwithstanding any of the other provision of this fee schedule, the Board of Supervisors retains the authority to consider other fee waiver requests when it considers such waivers to be equitable and in the public interest. An applicant has provided a following list of reasons for the justification, including that there will be no expense to the county in the development and maintaining of the park. The park will not require a fee for ordinary access. Money saved from the fee waiver will be used for park development and maintenance. Again, Jack's Helping Hand is a nonprofit organization. It'll provide outdoor recreation for the physically and mentally challenged special needs children. And finally, the park will create active recreational opportunities for all children in the community. And staff has recommended approval based on the findings in Exhibit A that the project meets a previously identified need by the board. It's not a facility that's presently available in the community. It has generated community support. It would reduce the cost because it's not funded directly by the county and it serves all the individuals in the county. And then the last one is to address footnote 7E in our fee schedule, that the waiver of the fees is equitable and in the public interest. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple requests to speak. Mr. Wynn?
Mr. Meacham and friends, my name is Mike Wynn. I'm from Napomo. I'm just speaking to urge you to approve the waiver of this fee. And for a reason that actually didn't make the list, and yet it makes sense to me. Normally, the landowner is the person who funds a general plan amendment, not the person who's running the land. In this case, the land is yours, or I should say ours, but anyway. Because it is in the public interest and is being done for the public purposes, and because it's on land that you own, I hope that you will waive those fees. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Friend.
Good morning, Jeremy Farn from Wallace Group. It feels like I was just up here.
Look for a minute.
Well, all the reasons that staff actually presented, and including Mr. Wynn's comments, I'm here for actually for questions at this point because all the reasons have already been stated. The just to give a perspective of construction costs, if you know, going through the process, it's about a $5.1 million of construction costs for this park. And so we're, being a nonprofit organization, they're doing the very best to look at all the financing and the improvement costs for this project. And so they would, this would help in alleviating some of the burden of those costs if these fees are waived. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see if there's questions from the board. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll thank you for staff's work and Mr. Wayne's recommendation as well. Let me add one more that children are one-third of our population, but all of our future. This is an investment in the future of our children. For that reason, I move the approval of staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a little discussion. We have a motion and a second, but we have a couple of other questions here. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, it's a rather moot point, I think. At this time, since we have the motion already before us, but I was curious, and I had asked Mr. Grant earlier, rather than waiving the fees, since this is a public park for public use, if it wouldn't be possible to use the public facility fees from Parks or Quimby to pay those fees.
Thank you, Jim Grant, County Administrative Office. The simple answer for the PFF public facility fees is no. The reason being is that the park facility fees are based on population growth, new development, and new development assumptions, and the identification then of the needed facilities to support that growth. So the plan itself, the public facility fee plan, has a list of parks that are to be funded through the public facility fee revenue. And Jack Ready Park is not on that list. So unless the board wanted to put the park on the list, which we could not do today,
right,
it would probably come back at when we update the PFF fees on an annual basis, which I don't recommend at the time. I would just say the answer is no, we can't use those fees.
Okay. Well, I know that we have, I think, just under $1 million in that fund, and I thought if it were appropriate to use, rather than having planning absorb this cost, have the parks absorb that cost, and since that's not an option.
We have enough money that we can reimburse the general fund.
Okay, with that, I'm going to call the question. I have a motion by Supervisor Sajjan, second by Supervisor Hill, to process a waiver on these fees. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Absolutely.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am. And next one, please.
Next item is C4, a continued hearing to consider a request by the San Luis Obispo County to adopt a conservation and open space element of the county general plan. This item was continued from April 6th, and it's recommended to continue the item to April 27th.
Thank you. I have no staff report. There's no net need for one, and I have no one from the public. I need a motion from the board.
I'll move we continue to April 27th.
I'll second.
And that's fine. I'll make comment to staff on one typo, but we'll deal with that later.
Okay. So moved by Supervisor Gibson and second by Supervisor Patterson to continue the hearing of the conservation open space to April 27th. You have a question? I'm sorry.
Well, I think there's still one typo in the soils or the water conservation on ag, but I'll talk to staff about that as well.
Okay. Great. I need a roll call on that, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
And Mr. Meacham?
Aye. And we have one last item. I need a motion to approve the presentation.
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded. All in favor indicate by saying aye. I'm sorry, I need a roll call on this one, too.
Yeah, he's
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes, thank you. This is a resolution that is recognizing San Luis County Crime Victims' Rights Week. I see no one here, and the presentation will be made by Supervisor Hill tomorrow at the luncheon along with Mr. Gibson. You guys can sing the song together.
Okay,
with that,
there'll be a victim. There'll be a victim there, Mr. Chairman, I'll tell you. Supervisor Hill and I are singing. So.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes, we need about an hour for closed session.
1 hour, okay, and then we will reconvene after closed session to just report out. That does business for the day.